This is Phil Ferrand.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. We've got a lot of good stuff done. Puttering along. Things are happening. Let me just straighten this up a little bit. There we go. Did the Bugs Bunny thing. On Friday. That was very exciting. Because it was pouring rain. Not ideal when you have a paper costume. But obviously, I can read a weather report and a weather forecast, and I knew it was going to be pouring rain, so I'd gotten some big contractor black bags, so I put the major pieces in. The major pieces consisted of the Bugs Bunny mask itself, which was made out of cardstock from a pattern that I had purchased. Lots of little intricate pieces and flaps that had to be, you know, done, and things folded the correct direction. That was a fun project. Really impressive from an engineering standpoint. However it was done, whoever did it, very interesting, the pattern on this thing, because they had like dashed lines and then, I don't know, like dotted lines that were the fold lines. And then there were the solid lines that you would cut out. And some of them had tabs and some of them didn't have tabs. And they all had numbers. So you had to cut out, print all the pieces on 8.5 by 11 pieces of cardstock. And I had actually enlarged it as well. So I had done like a 15-inch version of it, which is kind of what fit on the pages. Because the pattern was actually done in A4 paper, because apparently it was done overseas, as opposed to 8.5 by 11 letter paper. So when I first printed it out, it had been reduced a little bit. And then once I realized that, I went ahead and printed it out, tried it on. It was a little smaller than I wanted, so I upscaled it and had to calculate how I would upscale it so that it would still fit on all the pieces of paper so that I could. So I went through all that, got that all done, upscaled it, built the whole thing. So that was one piece that went in the garbage bag, a garbage bag. And then the second garbage bag had the tuxedo jacket that I had built from origami using cardstock. And that one, I overbuilt the pieces. So I had one piece that ended up being approximately six inches by 6 inches. And if I remember correctly, I built 40 of those, 40, which I didn't need nearly that many, but that's when I thought I was going to be doing arm sleeves as well. So I built 40 of those, and then I had a different pattern that was a half inch fold, and I thought I was going to need about 12 of those. So I built all those. The larger patterns, the 1-inch folds, took me about 20 minutes a piece, and I built about 40 of those. And then the smaller folds took me about an hour and 20 minutes a piece, and I built 12 of those. So that was very exciting. So that was the second bag. I had this black cardstock tuxedo in there. And then the third bag was a poster board. A poster board front that just was had a big circular on the end, and then it went over my shoulders. So it was like the shirt. And then I had also built a bow tie to go on that. So that one went pretty well, except the bow tie. I had to build another one of the smaller half-inch folds, and so that was another hour and 20 minutes there. But that was in the third bag. And then I had another bag that just had different accoutrements in it, like my Bugs Bunny rabbit slippers and, you know, just my gloves and my wrist cuffs and those kind of things. So I... I went to breakfast. Breakfast was okay because it wasn't raining too hard. But then by the time I got to the Walmart, let's go. Left-hand turn signal, and the guy was just sitting there staring at his phone. Then once I got to Walmart, it was raining. So I had my tennis shoes on and had the four bags, sprinted for the door with an umbrella so that I just didn't get drenched. And then I got changed in the foyer. And it all went, you know, pretty well, aside from the fact that when I sprinted through the rain, the bunny tail got wet. And so when I put on the black tuxedo jacket, the cardstock absorbed the moisture out of the bunny tail. And so that kind of, yeah. So, messed that up. So when I got home, I patched that because I had extra of the little origami pieces because I made far too many. So I just grabbed a couple of the extra pieces and seamed that up and got that repaired, and so I was good to go for Saturday, and the sun was out on Saturday, and a good time was had by all. So that's fun. Doing Star Wars tomorrow, and in the process of doing the Bugs Bunny thing, an old friend got in touch with me on Facebook, and he said, hey, do you ever have people join you? He said, do you ever announce ahead of time what you're going to be doing for the weekend? And as it turns out, this weekend, the holiday I'm celebrating does happen on Saturday. It's May the 4th, so it's Star Wars Day. And so I thought, well, here we go. So I actually posted on Facebook and said, hey, going to be in the store around 9 o'clock, be in the store for about a half an hour, got things to do, but I'll be there. And if you want to come by and say hey, throw on a Star Wars t-shirt and come by and say hey. So at this point, I don't think I have anybody taking me up on that, but, you know, we'll see. So it should be fun. So that's coming up this weekend. That's the R2-D2-2 costume, which was one of the early costumes, and I really do like that costume. It's the reason I've kept it around, because it's just goofy. You know, I found a t-shirt, and the t-shirt has R2-D2-2 in a tutu. R2-D2 in a tutu, you know, dancing, leaping into the air. And I thought, that's funny. And so I just built the costume around that. I wear the t-shirt, but I got a little tutu. And I've got a bodysuit and leggings that are R2-D2. And, you know, got some ballet slippers and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's cute. It's cute. I did get tickled with the artist who actually created the t-shirt to begin with, because he had named the t-shirt R22D22, which is fine, but it's not as funny as R2D22, because R2D22 delays the punchline and gives you just a pause, letting people believe they know what you're going to say, i.e. R2-D2, and then you surprise them on the end. So I think it's much funnier to say R2-D2-2 as opposed to R2-2-D2-2 or R2-2-D2. That's not as funny as R2-D2-2. So anyways, that's my little assertion as far as comedy goes. But that's tomorrow. It'll be fun. I'm working on a parrot beak right now for World Parrot Day. But then I'm also simultaneously working on Marvin the Martian Day. I'm trying to decide how I'm going to get the eyes to move. If I was just going to do a static costume with the Marvin the Martian head and just put eyeballs on it, you know, just ovals on it, white ovals, you know, that the costume itself would not be that hard to build. It's big block elements, you know. Even Marvin the Martian's gun is like just big block elements, and his shoes are big block elements, and it would be fine. But I'd really like the eyeballs to move on that black sphere that's Marvin the Martian's face. And one way I had considered doing that was with some sort of spherical LED panel. And I've been looking into that and looking into that. And I did have a really great suggestion from one of my friends. He said, well, why don't you just make it flat? And I was like, no, I don't really want to make it flat. But then I got thinking about it and I thought, you know, if instead of a spherical head for Marvin the Martian, I had like spherical that then came down to a circle in front, and then you could just do, you know, a flat screen on that circle, that would be easier. Or a spherical back of the head that would come and then go into a square, and then you could just do a square LED. LED screen. And that certainly can be done. And then it could not be Marvin the Martian, but one of Marvin the Martian's cousins, you know. I mean, so there could be something like that. That the race of the Martians don't all look like Marvin the Martian, but their heads are different shape depending on what lineage they come from, and et cetera, et cetera. So I could make up a whole story and make that work. But for now, my current idea is to do something where I have nested spheres that are printed 3D, and then using those nested spheres, design something to where I can rotate the spheres in three dimensions or as many dimensions as I need. Because when you look at the Marvin the Martian eyes, there are certain things that are static, mostly static, and then there's other things that move, like the pupils on the eyes, they move. But the eyes themselves can move in...
Oh, excuse me.
Can move in concert or not at all. And then to get expression, if I could just move the little black dots a little bit, and then potentially have something that would come down from the top, and it would only have to move up and down from the top, but it would be like eyebrows. So that as you move that down from the top, then that would make it look like Marvin the Martian was frowning. And I think just that combination of having eyebrows, quote unquote, drop down and come back up and be able to control how far the eyebrows drop down, and then also be able to control how the eyeballs move, I think just that would be enough to get plenty of expression out of those eyes. So if that could be done, maybe, you know, maybe I can 3D print concentric spheres and then put gears out of the axes and put stepping motors on those and then control it. I don't know. I'm thinking that would be a pretty interesting project to do, and a lot of mechanics and a lot of Arduino controller boards and those kind of things, and that would be fun. So I'm working my way through that. Once I get this parrot beak done, then, you know, I'll get started. I'll get started on that. The Marvin the Martian Day is at the end of July. And I would be swapping it out for, I think, Rat Catcher Day. Which I like Rat Catcher Day too. So, you know, if I don't get it done, then I'll just go to Rat Catcher Day on it. I just love the whole idea of Rat Catcher's Day. So anyways, that's good. Writing is good. I'm only 400 words down this week. And we're going along. And the section that I'm in, easy to get the 400 words. I've got small group tonight. But after small group, then I'll probably plow through those 400 words. And that should get resolved. I'm starting to hear back from beta readers at this point. They're turning in their corrections, so that's good. So all is well there. And what else? I think that's about it. work is good, costumes are good, writing is good. Book 21's going fine, so I'm well into it now. I just started chapter 9 of book 21, and there's approximately 30 chapters, and you know, so I'm about a third of the way into it. And so I all things being equal, I should be able to get at least halfway. I really love it when I get to 90,000 words in the first writing sprint, because then I only have approximately 60,000 left to go, as opposed to getting to 80,000 words and having 70,000 left to go. It just makes the second half of the write easier. So we'll see. We'll see. I have enough weeks to get that done if I can stick to this schedule. We'll see how it goes. So this week, we do have small groups tonight, although we don't have small groups for much longer. I think we've got two or three more times and then we're done. This week, I did have some notes that I had put together of an interesting topic, but we had an occurrence this week, and then as I was listening to a Jordan Peterson podcast today, he had a guest on, and they were discussing personal responsibility and where do you draw the line between personal behavior and responsibility to society and all that kind of stuff. And since we had just had this incident on Monday, I thought, you know what? Let's chat about that instead of the notes, and I'll just take the notes and delay those notes for a week, and we'll get back to that next week. So Monday, I'm at work, and I get a call around, 2:30, something like that, 2:30 or 3:30, I think it was 2:30. I get a call around 2:30 from the young man who lives in our rock house, and he says, hey, he said, are you home? I said, no, I'm in at work. He said, okay, are you expecting any guests? Do you know if Lynette and, or, you know, Alan and Elizabeth that are expecting guests? And I said, I don't know. He said, I was just suddenly thinking, you know, you should probably take out your garbage because you're going to be really busy tomorrow. So he said, I took out the garbage and a car came up the lane and then it turned in Liz and Alan's driveway. And I was looking at it and, you know, the windows were busted out and duct taped. And he said, I'm looking at this car and thinking, this doesn't look right. And he said they kind of got maybe halfway up Liz and Alan's driveway and then they kind of stopped and kind of backed up and, you know, pulled back and then started to go back down the lane like they were leaving. And he said, you know, they're pulled into your drive. I said, okay. I said, and my cameras had started going off. So I said, let me take a look real quick. And so took a look. Sure enough, a young lady had hopped out of the car and she had walked up to our front door and tried our front door, trying to get in. And then she leaned down and grabbed an Amazon package off our front porch and, you know, took off. And I had Dustin on the phone and I said, oh, so she just stole a package off our front porch. And he said, wait, what? She stole a package off your front porch. I said, yeah, she just walked up and grabbed it. He said, okay, I'm on it. And so Dustin grabbed his rifle and ran down to the house. And the next thing I know, my cameras are lighting up and he's yelling at them, telling them to get down on the ground. And, you know, things are happening. And so he's still got his phone on it. He says, Phil, call the police. And I said, I'm on it. And so, you know, I hung up and called 911. They were going to dispatch a policeman. And about the same time, Lynette was in the house with her mom, and she heard the car pull up, but she just assumed it was Amazon delivery. And so she didn't pay much attention, but the car seemed to be out there a long time. And then all of a sudden, she heard Dustin start to shout. So she was like, okay, something is not right. Turns out the young lady not only stole the package off my front porch, but she then ran around the back of the house, which of course we have video of all this, went around the back of the house, started checking doors there, found an open door. That was my fault. Found an open door, walked in, made a beeline for Amber's room, grabbed a couple of laptops out of Amber's room, was coming back around the house when she realized that Dustin was there, and then was trying to tell him, oh, no, listen, we were told to come out and get this stuff. And Dustin was shouting at him, saying, okay, tell me the name of the people who live in this house. Tell me their names, and then I might believe you. And of course they couldn't, because they didn't know. So Dustin got the stuff back from them. They left. The deputy came out. We downloaded all the videos and stuff. And the videos have very clear recording of the young lady's face. And get this, the guy's car that may have been stolen, the guy's car had a customized license plate on it. Sure is. SUR-IZ. It's like, if you're going to go stealing stuff off people's porches, you probably don't want to have a license plate that's memorable. But maybe they stole the car, too. Who knows? So then the deputy came out, and we did the thing, and, I got home a little later, and because they had it under control, so I just came on my regular time. And, I talked to the deputy and downloaded all the video clips and emailed all the video clips to him, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we haven't heard anything more from the deputy at this point, but, we've done what we're going to do. And we got everything back, and they didn't actually make away with anything. So, there's all the stuff that follows that. I mean, me personally, I grew up in the Philippines, and theft was just kind of a common thing, if you'd give them any chance, which I did because I left the door. I left the door open downstairs. If you give them any kind of a chance, they'll just come in and steal you blind. In the Philippines, we lived on a campus that had a wall around it because of that, and they had gates and all that kind of thing, but in the Philippines, if you're going down the road and you've got your window down, you've got your arm hung out the window, and it has a watch on it, you can just pretty much guess that when you stop, someone is going to come racing by you, and they're going to grab that watch and just rip it right off your arm, because everybody is looking for something, because, the Spaniards were there for 400 years, and in the good Catholic tradition, what they taught people is that it's not necessarily wrong unless you get caught, and then if you get caught, you can just say a couple of Hail Marys, and ta-da, ta-da, you're okay. So there's a whole different structure of how people feel about the relationship of their behavior and morality in the Philippines than there is in the United States, or than there is in Fiji. Now, we were in Fiji visiting my parents, and, that's amazing. The Wesleyans were in Fiji, and the Wesleyans taught the people a whole different thing, personal responsibility, morality, all that sort of thing, that you needed to not do the bad thing in the first place. And so it was interesting seeing those two cultures growing up in one, and then seeing Fiji, where they would have prisoners that had been released from the prison to go do on a work, some kind of work leave thing, and there would be like three or four prisoners and one guard walking behind him, and he just has like a machete, and they're not shackled or anything like that, but they're just walking very obediently. And these are Fijians, so they are big guys, could have easily overpowered the one guy, but they don't. They're in prison, so they're doing their time. So it's very interesting to watch all the differences between all of that. Well, in the Jordan Peterson podcast, they got on the topic of the difference between traditional liberals and traditional conservative, which these topics are. And the guy who considered himself to be a traditional liberal defined the differences between liberals and conservatives as, he said, he defined, from what he could see, conservative is as really having two questions. Whereas the liberals would only have one. So he said the two questions really are along the orders of what should you do as an individual? And he said liberals will admit that there are things you should do. But he said then the conservatives want to go further and ask another question of what must you do? And that they're more than happy to enforce people having to do certain things, being forced to do certain things. That was kind of his definition of what a conservative is, which is really interesting at this point when you consider all the woke and the far left people, because they're very much about what are we going to force people to do. And that was part of their discussion, the big change that there has been. And I was, you know, I was thinking about that today as I was just kind of working, and it occurred to me that it would be interesting that he made those differentiations, because then they got talking about assisted suicide, and then they got talking about gender transition surgeries and all these things. And his opinion was people as adults should be able to do whatever they want. That adults were adults. He said it's something different for children. He said, but adults should be able to do anything they want, including committing suicide or having help committing suicide. So assisted suicide. And I haven't listened to the rest of it, but this is a whole really interesting mix of things to me, because as I'm fond of saying, there was really only one governmental structure that God ever set up as his preference. And that was the governmental structure that he set up in Judges when the people settled in the land. Every man had his own piece of land. You know, every family had their own piece of land. They just worked that land. There was no direct supervisor. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And then if there was a problem, if there was a threat from the outside, then God raised up a judge, rallied all the troops, went and fought the thing, and then everybody went back to their own house. So God's form of government, we would interpret that almost as like anarchy, that there wasn't any overarching governmental structure. And when the people of Israel actually told God, we want a king, we want a true governmental structure, God said, no, you don't. And they said, yes, we do. So he gave them a king. So, you know, that idea of anarchy, one might think that that's more of a liberal concept, but that could also be a conservative concept, according to the definition that they were given, that, you know, what should you do versus what must you do. But I think in the discussion of the conservative and liberal concepts, I think the man who described himself as a liberal was doing a little bit of sleight of hand. Because While it's true that he might have fewer things that he would be willing to enforce in terms of what must you do, it's sleight of hand because he's assuming that people are generally going to behave in a certain way. So let's just have a thought experiment. You know, if the majority of your population are going to rob and steal you blind any chance that you get, they're going to break into your houses at night, and there's just going to be roving hordes of people that are going to be completely lawless, he would say, well, you're affecting someone else, so we have to stop that. Right. And that's true. But you can also map into things like in the inner cities now, okay, if they're not affecting anyone else and you have drug addicts and mentally incapacitated people and they're just out on the streets, there comes a point where even though those individuals are not affecting a given individual directly, it is affecting society. And what's happening is that even if individuals aren't being robbed, if you have hordes of homeless people just sleeping on the street, doing drugs, even if they're not, you know, directly affecting anyone else, the fact is that customers, they're not going to wade their way through piles of poops and needles and everything else to get to a store unless they absolutely don't have any other choice. And so instead of going to that store that's in the neighborhood, they will go someplace else. Because our whole structure in a free market system, in capitalism, in a democracy, our entire structure rests on the fact that the majority of people will behave according to what they should do. And so you have that as a foundation to have these high-minded discussions about what people should do as opposed to what they must do. And these high-minded discussions all start falling apart if you don't have a majority of your people doing what they should do. So, like the inner cities now that look like zombie apocalypse landscapes, if all you have is people who don't have jobs, who are sleeping on the street, who are defecating on the street, urinating on the street, who are using drugs openly on the street, even though they're not personally affecting anybody else, the businesses are going to vacate because they can't make any money because they don't have any customers. And then the businesses vacate, and now you've got abandoned buildings, and you've got, you know, very quickly, society disintegrates. Because society, in a capitalist democratic society, in a good society, society depends on people, for the most part, doing what they should do. So then, of course, the question is why would people do what they should do? Well, the wrong answer for that is that, well, because we have roaming hordes of police officer that are, you know, enforcing the jot and tittle of the law, and you turn it into an authoritarian state where everybody's ratting out their neighbors and et cetera, et cetera. That's the wrong answer. The right answer is that people have a moral framework that encourages them to do what they should do. And that people have a discipline within themselves to cause them to do the things that will bring about mental, spiritual, physical prosperity for them, that they have that discipline. You can build a society if most of your people have the discipline to behave in a moral way. And if they don't have that discipline, you can't build a society. So it's really critical that people have that discipline. It's really critical that the majority of people have that discipline. And unfortunately, we have walked away from a moral code in this country. And so more and more and more, there are less and less people who have that type of internal discipline. Which kind of circles around to this idea of children and adults, because the liberal guy, he was saying, look, children are different. Children have to be protected. Children have to be, you know, you have to be more authoritarian with children. And my response to that is, I think your definition of children in terms of just as an age is not very beneficial. Because what you really need to do is define children as those who have not acquired the capability to build an environment for themselves in which they can prosper. Because just because someone has become 18, 19, 20, if they have not built an environment where they can prosper, if they are drug addicts, if they are mentally, have mental illnesses, if they're, you know, we as kind and generous people should have some mechanism for helping them and encouraging them. And if you want to call that what you must do, well, that's fine, but it really comes down to love your neighbor, because your neighbor obviously has not developed the skills to be able to manage their own life. And so, you know, it was very interesting to hear. I mean, if we just had day in and day out and day in and day out people stealing stuff off our porches, well, we'd do what we could to slow that down. But that's not exactly the type of society we would want to live in. And perhaps I would say, you know, we really need to stop people from just stealing stuff. And I've already taken steps for that. I signed up for Amazon's garage key because I happen to have an automated garage system that actually signs up with Amazon stuff. And so now when the drivers come up to our house, they'll be able to open our garage, put the packages in the garage, shut the garage door, done and done, done and done. So we're taking all those steps, and that's fine. But for a liberal-minded people, a person to feel like they can say, well, I don't want to force people to do stuff. I just want to tell people this is what you should do, but I'm not going to tell them what they must do. Well, honestly, riding on the coattails of the fact that most people are behaving in a moral manner. Because you could be real high-minded about that, but if most people are not behaving in a moral manner, you cannot establish a fabric for society, and then you don't have any good place to live. So yes, somewhere, no matter whether you're a liberal or a conservative, we need people to do what they must do, or else we don't actually have any place worth living. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.